I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. My friends, we are getting fat. A third of Americans are obese, and another third are overweight. A growing number of our kids are overweight or obese. And this might be the first generation expected to live shorter lives than their parents. Despite a lot of attention to the problem, it's growing, not shrinking. Our next guest says we need to address this epidemic, and he has a prescription for how to do that and begin to heal the planet at the same time. Essentially, Dr. McDougall, author of The Starch Solution, says eat your veggies, eat your fruit, eat your starchy carbs, pasta, rice, potatoes, all of it. He says meat and dairy are poisonous for our bodies. He says sugar is fine, oil not so fine. And he rails against the USDA for putting the interests of the agricultural industry above the health of the American people. He worked to get a bill passed in California that mandates doctors have to learn about nutrition. So let's welcome Dr. John McDougall, author of The Starch Solution. Welcome to Your Call.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your preparation.
I read the book, and I actually am practicing it just to see what it's like. So, but before we get to your nutrition analysis, which we'll get to in just a moment, I'd like to hear a little bit about your own personal history and how that led you to become an MD. You had a stroke when you were just 18 years old. Tell us about that and the revelations it led to.
I was raised in a family in Detroit. And my parents, they weren't wealthy, to say the least, and they really had no serious aspirations for their children to become physicians or, you know, much more than be college educated. In my home, a doctor was next to God. And to tell you the truth, I never thought about being a doctor until I had to meet these gods in a hospital. I mean, I had a massive stroke at age 18. Certainly wasn't my plan. No thought I'd ever had of having a stroke. And most people who hear about an 18-year-old having a stroke think that's very, very unusual for a, you know, a young person like that to suffer such a tragedy.
And but it is unusual,
is about
right?
1,000 teenagers a year suffer strokes and heart attacks, unless you're a famous baseball player or basketball player. You really don't get any national attention. Well, when I was put into that doctor situation, that medical situation, I had to, I had a chance to meet doctors. What I found was they were awful nice people, but they weren't really next to God. And I decided that even though I came from somewhat of a limited income family, one that, of course, encouraged me to do the best I could in life, I could become a doctor. And so I went back to school because of that experience. And I became a board-certified internist, a medical doctor. And I have to tell you, that was a long time ago. We're talking about 1970. I finished medical school in 1972. So, you know, that's how it all started, the beginning of my experience with the medical business. But then, of course, other things happened. You know, once I went to medical school, I met this wonderful woman, Mary, who I've been with for the last 40 years. And then we were sent off to Hawaii, where I became an intern. I did my internship. And then what happened was a situation that really changed my life. As a matter of fact, I have to date pretty much all my education and all the things I have to talk to you about today from this experience where I was a doctor on a sugar plantation on the Big Island of Hawaii. And during that experience, I met people who lived on starch. I met first-generation Filipinos, Japanese, Chinese, and Koreans who were trim, healthy, hearty, strong. They were working into their 80s and sometimes their 90s, living on a diet basically of rice and vegetables. Now, I had also some contrast there. The children of these first-generation immigrants from Hawaii or the Philippines, Japan or China, they had children, and as a result, the kids being born and raised on the Big Island of Hawaii got exposed more to rich Western foods, and they learned the Western diet. They got fatter, they got sicker, they got arthritis, they got heart disease. I mean, all the things I trained about being a doctor, these young children developed when they left their parents' traditional diet based on rice and vegetables.
So there's a sort of irony about prosperity that it's making us less healthy.
That's true. Prosperity is making us less healthy. As a matter of fact, we end up eating like prosperous people. We end up eating like kings and queens. I think most of our listening audience can relate to the fact that the kings and queens of old were fat, they were sick, they had gout in their feet. In fact, you can go back to the pharaohs 3,500 years ago in Egypt, and the queens and the priests and the priestesses, these are people who dined on the American diet because of the luxury they had, because of the wealth that they had. In fact, we analyzed their hair, the people from that were found in the, you know, the mummies, and you analyze their hair and you see what their diet is. What you find is their diet is a diet of meats and poultry and other rich foods. And so I think if your listening audience can stop and think about it for a minute, and they can just take a look at a world picture, they can look around the world and they see that as people in Japan or in China or the Philippines become wealthy, they lose their immunity to obesity and to multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis and heart disease. I mean, it's a picture for view right in front of everybody's eyes. If you'll just look at it, people lose their immunity to good looks and to good health when they abandon that traditional rice or starch-based diet, as I like to call it, and they instead assume a diet of wealthier people, Americans or kings and queens or pharaohs and priests and so on of the past. It's really that simple.
Well, so let's delve into your thesis. You advocate a vegan diet based mainly on what's become to be known as the dreaded C word, carbs. Why did you deliberately title this book Starch?
Because I wanted to take a sharp stick and poke it right in their eye. That's what I wanted to do. I mean, that's why I did it. What we're doing is we're dealing with a background in our society where everybody believes starches are bad. If you mention to anybody sitting next to you right now and you say, okay, I'm going to go eat starch, they'll say, you can't eat starch. It'll make you fat or maybe even give you diabetes. But the truth of the matter is if you just stop for a minute and say, I can't eat starch like rice, because rice turns to sugar and will make me obese. And then you think there are 1.73 billion Asians still living on this planet who get primarily their calories from rice. And how many of them are obese? I mean, I can stand in a square in a city in Thailand or Cambodia or even Japan today or in rural China. I can stand there amongst 100,000 people, and there's not a single fat person, and they all live on rice. So how in the world can everybody know that rice makes you fat? It turns to sugar and makes you fat. Starches make you fat. I mean, yeah, I could have called it a plant-strong diet or a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet, but that's not the message I want to get across to people. What I want people to understand is that what they need to eat, you need to focus on the traditional diets of people, like, for example, the Mayas and the Aztecs. They're known as the people of the corn. And you think about people from South America. You think about people from the Andes, the Incas, for example. Potatoes, that's their diet. The Inca warriors, when they went to battle, they switched from potatoes to quinoa because it gave them extra strength, they believed. Or you can look at the Middle East, and you see people in the Middle East living on barley and wheat. I mean, the Middle East used to be the breadbasket of the world. We're talking about starch. We're talking about carbohydrate. Well, how all of a sudden did the fuel that has supplied the energy for most of the people that ever walked this planet become evil? And the more we believe it is evil, the fatter and sicker we get. And it's just a simple U-turn. You just turn your thinking around. You go back to the traditional diet of the Mayas or the Aztecs or the people of the Middle East or the Asians or wherever you – the American Indian. The American Indian's traditional diet was – called the Three Sisters, which is based on squash, corn, and beans.
Well, so Dr. McDougall, give us a quick synopsis. I sort of did it at the beginning, but what is it that you advocate? What is the sort of nutritional diet?
Okay, every listener has to agree with me on a couple of things. One is you must
eat. Well, no, they don't.
Yes, they do. They agree that you must eat.
Okay.
I mean, what listener out there would say, I can live without eating? You're a breatharian? Okay, you must eat. Second of all, the reason you eat is for energy. I mean, if you stop and think about it, that's why you eat. You don't eat for vitamin C. You don't eat for protein. You eat for energy. What you have is a choice as to where you're going to get those energy calories. You can get them from fat or protein. And when we say fat or protein, you should think meat and dairy. Or you can get them from carbohydrate. And when I say carbohydrate, you may think plants, but actually the kind of plant food that stores lots of carbohydrate, lots of energy, so you can make it through the day, so you can win the battles, that's known as starch. These are plant parts that contain large amounts of carbohydrate, like roots and stems and seeds. these are the plant parts that are foods that I think you won't just ask me about. What do you eat? They're things like oatmeal for breakfast or hash brown potatoes, or for lunch you have any kind of vegetable soup you can think about. Bean soup, pea soup, lentil soup, bean burritos for dinner. You can have pasta and marinara sauce. Again, I want you to think back before Americans became wealthy, back before we had this diet of kings and queens. Where did people get their calories?
All right. So,
starch.
Got it. All right. So why, though, exclude all meat and dairy? You say this is a historically validated diet. Sorry. Wait. Just let me get you.
All right. Go ahead.
Why not allow for a little bit, especially if your thesis is that it conforms to how humans evolved eating? And didn't we always have just small amounts of meat and dairy?
Yes. Absolutely. That has always been a traditional diet. Notice the name of the book is not The Vegan Diet. It's not the don't eat animals diet. It's called the starch solution. You're absolutely correct. If a listener out there says, okay, now I get it. What I need to do is I need to eat more rice, more potatoes, more beans, more pasta, and I'll cut back on my meat and dairy. You have tremendously improved the health of you and your family, tremendously increased your potentials for weight loss. This is not necessarily a vegan diet. This is not what the book is about. In fact, in the beginning of the book, it says this is not an all-or-nothing thing. But there's also a section there called the Starch Challenge, and it's based on a study that was done or published in 1978 in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. A guy named Michelson took college students, college men, at my alma mater at Michigan State University. And what he did is he asked these college-age men to eat 12 slices of bread a day, either white bread or whole grain bread, 12 slices of bread a day. That's all. He didn't say eat less pizza, didn't say eat less meat, less eggs, just said eat 12 slices of bread a day, and they're eating in a cafeteria situation at Michigan State University. The average weight loss in 2 months among these overweight college men by just adding the bread was 14 pounds for the white bread and 19 pounds for the whole grain bread. See, and that's why I have the section in there called the Starch Challenge. There are a lot of people out there who don't want to give up all their animal foods. Hey, that's where you're at in life. You want to be thin. You want to be healthy. You want to get the chest pain to stop. You want to get the bowels to start working. You want to get the grease off your skin. You know, you want to feel well. Well, just do the Starch Challenge. Add 12 slices of bread a day, or 4 servings of potatoes, or 4 servings of pasta. I mean, if you just bring those starch calories up, it'll replace the meat and the oil and the dairy that you were otherwise eating. So you've got it right. This is not a vegan diet. This is not a religion. This is a tool to get people to be healthy.
All right. So when did carbs get such a bad rap? It seems like over the past couple of years, everybody thinks...
Yes.
Don't eat any carbs. Just cut out all carbs and you'll be fine. And I'm going to invite our listeners into this conversation before you answer that question. We want you to join us. We're talking with John McDougall, author of The Starch Solution. He's a medical doctor. You can call us at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Are you a vegan and does it work for you? What are the impediments to eating healthy? And what do you think of Dr. McDougall? Prescription. Is it too radical for you? How would you address our obesity epidemic? You can join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Does changing our diet have the power to begin healing us, both our health and our environmental issues? 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. All right, so let's talk about this bad rap of carbs and kind of what's the genesis of that and what's been the effect.
I don't really know where it started. Maybe it was Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, back, see, I had national best-selling books in the 1970s. I actually had the same literary agent and the same writer that Robert Atkins had at those times back in the 70s. People lost a lot of weight eating these no-carb, high-meat, high-butter, high-dairy, high-cheese diets, but they knew something was wrong.
Hold on one second. Dr. McDougall, how come that it works?
Oh, but you mean the Atkins diet?
Yeah, that whole high-protein thing.
It makes you sick. That's how it works. Let me tell you what happens when you deprive yourself of carbohydrates, because carbohydrates is the essential fuel of the cells. I mean, remember, you have a glycolysis is the basic cellular metabolism for energy. The basic energy molecule of the body is glucose. Okay, you deprive the body of carbohydrate, it has to resort to another kind of fuel. And what that kind of fuel is fat. Well, when fat's metabolized, it produces something called ketones. And ketones make people nauseated. They make them lose their appetite. And so as a result, what happens when you eat the Atkins diet, these carbohydrate deficient diets, is you become sick, you lose your appetite, you don't eat, you lose weight. But also you regain the weight, as Dr. Atkins did himself. He used to be, 40, 50, 65 pounds overweight, the man himself. He couldn't even stick to his own diet. You know, I've been thinking about doing an article. I write a newsletter every month, and I've been thinking about doing an article on different diet doctors. And I wanted to look at the diet doctors throughout history, like Robert Atkins. I'm not going to go into any names, but there are a whole bunch of diet doctors out there. I'd like them to take off their shirts. I'd like to see look at what they look like themselves. There, you got a bunch of fat, sick-looking diet doctors out there telling you what to eat. Now, you think about the vegans that you know. Since you brought up the subject, the vegans, the people who promote a high vegetable, low meat diet. I mean, think about their personal appearance, what they look like. You're looking at young, healthy, strong, trim individuals each and every time. I mean, if you're an observer, if you just open your eyes, to the world picture, just like I shared with you. Starch eaters throughout history, starch eaters today are always trim. They avoid heart disease and breast cancer and prostate cancer. And the diet doctors of today, hey, the fat ones recommend you don't eat carbs. Doesn't that tell you something? Come on, folks.
That's Dr. John McDougall. He is the author of The Starch Solution. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Let's go ahead and invite our callers in right now. Why don't we go to Carlisle in Carmel Valley? Welcome to Your Call, Carlisle.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I came in late to the show, but I'd like him to address the factors of GMO and pesticides and the fact that our starches have been contaminated by these factors, and if this is not creating obesity. And as I'm an organic farmer, I know that some of the scientists are, represent corporations. So there's a whole area that is a whole nother factor, of how these chemicals and, the GMOs are affecting our whole body. And I don't know if there's been adequate studies on this or not, but anyway, we eat organic just to deal with it. And anyway, if he could address that, that'd be great.
Thank you so much, sure. Carlisle. Yeah, Dr. McDougall.
That's great. First of all, the examples I gave you about the pharaohs of 3,500 years ago, I mean, they had no tobacco, they had lots of sunshine and exercise, and they had no GMOs, and they had no pesticides, and the kings and queens and priests were fat and sick and had horrible atherosclerosis and terrible gallbladder disease and even birth defects due to diets. Hey, this is not a problem. I mean, there are problems with pesticides and probably problems with GMOs. The problem I'm talking about is eating like a king and queen. That's why you get fat and sick. And the way to get the least amount of pesticide in your food is to eat low on the food chain. All of you have probably heard of biomagnification, bioaccumulation of these fat-soluble pesticides and other environmental chemicals. It's not in contradiction to eat a healthy diet and a low pesticide diet. If you eat grains and potatoes and so on, they're the foods that are very low in pesticide content. As you feed them to animals, they get concentrated in the animal fat, and you get concentrations thousands of times greater when you eat high on the food chain, when you eat the cheese and the chicken and the fish and the beef. So we're in sync with what we're talking about. You want to eat low pesticides. But you also need to understand where the problem is. The problem is in the basic food. You must get energy. If you get it from carbohydrate, i.e. starch, you will always be trim, and you will avoid the common diseases that we see. I mean, look around you. Everybody's sick.
And you're saying that this is one way to begin to heal a lot of common diseases.
You know, I run a residential program in Santa Rosa, California. I've run a residential program for almost 26 years. We've taken care of almost 5,000 people. I personally have. We're in the process of publishing data on these people. Let me tell you what the results are in 7 days. 1,700 people we're going to be publishing on. You take these people, and all you do is you just change what they eat. No restriction on the amount of food. The food is delicious. And you tell them they can eat as much as they want of the food, the right kind of food. The results are the average weight loss in 7 days for women is 3.1 pounds. For men, it's 3.6 pounds. The average drop in cholesterol is 23 points. The average drop in blood pressure is 18 over 14 millimeters of mercury, and almost all the time, their blood pressure pills are stopped. These people get off insulin. They get off their diabetic pills. Right now, I'm running a study with Oregon Health and Science University. You know, the medical school up in Portland, the neurology department. We've been running it for 4 years, where we're treating multiple sclerosis with the exact kind of diet I'm telling you about. A very low fat, essentially no animal food diet based on starches, rice, corn, potatoes, things you love. I mean, what do we call these foods? These are called comfort foods. People love bread. They love pasta. They love beans. Why do you love these things? Because they're your food. Why do you not like the scenes of slaughterhouses? Hey, my cat would salivate if I took him through a slaughterhouse. You get the point?
Got the point. That's Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of The Starch Solution. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're going to go to a break in just a minute, but I want to start getting into something that Carlisle brought up, and you have a whole chapter on the USDA and sort of how we've been sold this food pyramid that largely conforms to agricultural industry needs rather than what you say are the health needs of people. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Now, the USDA serves two masters. It serves agribusiness, in other words, the dairy industry, for example. It serves, you know, the meat industry. And it also serves the citizens of the United States. It has two distinct bodies that it is supposed to protect and help their interest. Unfortunately, the interests of agribusiness generally conflict the interests of the health of the population of people. If you're going to promote meat, you know, pork, beef, chicken, et cetera, dairy products. If that's your goal, what you're doing is you're feeding foods to people that make them sick. So when Abe Lincoln set up the agribusiness, he called it the People's Department. Now here, 150 years later, it's clearly the Agribusiness Department. That's one of the major problems. They have the revolving door process where people who work in the dairy industry 1 year, they take a job in the USDA the next year. You know, it's just business. Nobody's out there trying to help you. It's just a matter of doing business.
And you feel like in some ways the medical industry is party to this?
Yes, they are. My colleagues, you know, I've been a medical doctor for 44 years. And my colleagues, unfortunately, have been lied to just like the general American public. They've been misguided as far as the correct dietary advice for people by the meat and dairy industry. They're heavily influenced what doctors learn. They support medical conferences. They send educational materials to doctors and to dietitians. As a result, generally doctors and dietitians are, they've got a blind eye to what the truth is. And so, you know, and unfortunately, the other master that the medical business answers to is to the drug industry.
All right.
And so the only tricks a doctor has are drugs. They don't know. They try and treat dietary diseases with blood pressure pills and diabetic pills, and people never get better.
All right, that is Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of The Starch Solution. And we also want to take your calls. 1-866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. We have a full bank of calls, so there isn't a line open right now, but there will be soon. 866-798-8255. Why are we as a culture so into fad diets? And have you tried them? What works for you? I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of KALW, and we're going to return to Holly Kernan's conversation with Dr. John McDougall in just a moment. There's so much interest in this subject. We've got our lines are full, emails are coming in. That's the kind of input that we depend on to make Your Call a fascinating conversation every day. You often have the most important questions to ask, and we're going to be hearing some of them in just a moment. But right now, I want to ask you to call a different number. That's 800-525-5555. 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. And if, Dr. McDougall, he argues that carbohydrates is the basic energy of the body. Well, the basic energy of local public radio is our listeners. Whether you're calling in or clicking, your support makes this place go. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. We do have the Start Solution, Dr. McDougall's book, yours for a $120 contribution, $10 a month to KALW. Your support for these kind of independent, truth-telling conversations that you hear every day on your call. 800-525-9917, or you can also go online to KALW.org. Every hour, we set a goal, a number of people we hope will participate and keep this station strong. In this hour, it's 20 calls or clicks, 20 people who decide to get involved, and one of them who's already got involved is Paul Sack in San Francisco. He's a listener who's put forward $500 to challenge other people who listen to this station to become members or to renew their membership. If we make it to 20 calls or clicks in this hour at any amount, whether it's at our basic membership rate of $50, whether you take the Dr. McDougall's book, The Start Solution, for a $120 contribution, or maybe you can do more. You say, I want to do a dollar a day. You could become a Your Call Insider. That's a dollar a day contribution to KALW, and you can come in, meet Rose Aguilar, Holly Kernan, the rest of the team, see the show produced, have a chat with us about what matters to you. That dialogue with you is so important. So when you go to 800-525-9917 or click on the Donate Now button at KALW.org, please be sure to give us your comments. Tell us what you value on KALW, what you want to see more of. Together, we can grow this independent public radio resource. And you know, we always bring the social context to these discussions, and your contribution as a listener, and we hope as a member, is what makes it happen. 800-525-9917. I see we have an open line. Be the next person to call. 800-525-9917 and show your support for Your Call and local public radio. Thanks.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about domestic violence, women in prison, and the film Crime After Crime. Friday, of course, is our media roundtable. That's the day that we speak with journalists about the week's news coverage. And today, we're having a conversation about the epidemic of obesity in the United States and globally now, and how to use diet to deal with many diseases. You can join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. We do not have an open line right now, but there will be one soon, 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment at our new website, which is yourcallradio.org, or send us a note to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Again, our guest is Dr. John McDougall, author of The Starch Solution. And John, we're going to go straight to calls to another John in Santa Cruz. Welcome to Your Call. Hi, John.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, so far, when I've been listening to your show, and thanks for the show, I hear mostly anecdotal and sort of appeals to the doctor's personal charisma, you know, sort of like, well, you know, have you ever seen a vegan that's fat? Or think about the Pharaohs, or what do you... You know, it's comfort food, so of course it's good. Those don't, to me, appeal to be, those aren't what I would expect as sort of scientifically based data.
So you want to hear more of the science
yeah,
behind this?
I personally read a whole bunch of data about endocrinology and about studies, like there's about, you know, different diets and metabolism of things. And it's a subject I've been studying a lot. I've seen lots of evidence in various medical journals about carbs and fat and diabetes, and so I would want to see stuff that counteracted that. Personally, I also have, you know, anecdotal stuff about, well, you know, think about what people used to eat, and if that seems like, if you carry it back to its real conclusion, then, you know, humans have been here much longer without agriculture, and I don't see where they got any starch before agriculture. So I'm thinking, you know, so there's that Neither does the historical argument seem to work for me, nor the sort of charming appeals to think. So that's
Stay on the line with us, will you, John?
Sure.
Santa Cruz, John. We've got our other John on the other line. But John, let me just understand something. You haven't eaten carbs in a long time. You're one of the people who's sort of off carbs.
I read a book by Stephen Taub, I think it's called How
Gary
Why
Taub.
We Get Fat. Yeah, Gary Taub. Thank you. And I had a lot of evidence. I went and looked up their journal articles that referenced, and I went and tried it because I had a big fat tire. Big spare tire that I didn't really like, and I've been not eating carbs ever since and feeling more energy, less sort of like crashing, roller coastering, and lost a whole ton of weight. And so,
that is
my personal evidence.
Fabulous. Okay, so stay on the line with us, John. Let's hear some of the medical evidence that you cite in your book, Dr. McDougall.
Well, fortunately for John, the book is referenced with about 3,000 scientific references. So he can go through the literature and he can see where he think it lays. This is a problem for the public, the scientific literature, which, of course, 70% of it, and I can show you the research on it, 70% of it is influenced by the food industry. The scientific literature may say one thing to one person, may say another to another person, but the reason that I give you simple observations that you can make to open your eyes is because you can see the truth. Now, if somebody says to you, like John, for example, let's just go over one statement that I said. And I said that starches, like rice, don't turn to sugar and don't make people fat. And the evidence I gave was 1.73 billion Asians who live on rice, and there's not a single fat person. Now, how would you counteract that observation, John? I'd like to hear your answer.
I would say you just said there's not a single fat person in Asia, which is ridiculous.
Not living on a starch-based diet, not living on a rice-based diet. You missed that part, John. There are a lot of fat people. I just got off a cruise a couple of days ago where there were a whole bunch of people from Asia, and they were stuffing themselves at the traditional American buffet. There are, John, we can look through the history books. We can look at the pictures. There are no, John, we need to make an observation. Now, you can't make things up. Now, we mean to make an observation, and I want all the listeners to listen to John and I. Do you know of any populations of people who've lived on starch-based diets at any time in history? I'm talking about billions and billions of people. Give me one population of people that has lived on a starch-based diet where any members who lived on that diet were overweight. I'm ready. Okay.
Any members? Well, I mean,
any members.
Generalizations like any, like the single person, like, can I go find one single overweight person? Do that? Well, I'll let that go for now and say, yes, I agree with you that in places like Asia where rice is the main thing, you don't have the obesity levels you do here. It's not. And
excuse me, obesity levels. We're talking about 30 to 70% of the people being obese and overweight to zero.
There's, right.
The difference.
So let me butt in here and just ask a question. Hold on, John. Why you said that it was because it was poisoning your body, but why does a diet, I think it's called the Atkins diet, this high protein, no carbs kind of diet, work so well for so many people in terms of losing weight?
And I've heard
really feeling good. So I guess two questions. Why does that work well? And is a one size fits all realistic?
Well, those are two questions. First of all, I explained to you why it works. When you eat the Atkins diet, a no-carb diet, you go into ketosis. Ketosis is associated with nausea and loss of appetite. You lose the weight. You lose water weight. It's temporary. People don't stay out. And even Robert Atkins couldn't follow it. He was overweight. I knew that man personally for over 10 years. He was overweight and unhealthy. So, you know, I explained to you why it works. What was the second question, Karen?
The second question is, is there, you know, does one size fits all? Have some of us evolved in different ways so that dairy?
Good question.
Yeah. You say yes.
Good question. Well, no, I didn't answer it yet.
Okay.
Let me tell you, because this is a really good question, because people talk about differences in blood type, differences in metabolic makeup and so on. And they think, well, you know, I'm a type O, I should be meat, or I'm a type A, I should be eating rice. There is a diet for, you know, most animals have a particular singular diet, and pet owners know what that diet is. For example, those of you who have cats at home, you know what a cat's supposed to eat. And those of you who have parrots at home, you know what a parrot is supposed to eat. And I bet none of you feed your parrots chicken or beef. and none of you feed your cats fruits and vegetables and nuts. And I bet none of you feed your cats and dogs and parrots and horses ice cream cones and candy bars and so on. So my contention is there is an ideal diet for each and every type of animal. And you can't mix up those diets or they get sick. Likewise, the human being is so singular in its genetic makeup that there is a diet for human beings, with rare exceptions. There are some people, and we don't want to waste our valuable time talking about those rare exceptions, but the diet for people is a starch-based diet with fruits and vegetables. Animal foods have always been a delicacy or times of feast and famine. So I don't see it that way. I see human beings as being pretty much similar, whether they happen to be from Asia or from Africa or from America, and all of their diets, every single population, large population of successful people, have lived on starch-based diets. No exceptions, except when they became rich. And then what happened? They got fat and sick.
That's Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of The Starch Solution. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. And let's go. We have a lot of callers, and I'd like to try and get to some of them. Let's go to Scott in Menlo Park. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi, Dr. McDougall. Yeah, I'm Scott, and I was wondering what you have to say about Dr. Robert Lustig's contention that sugar is the most dangerous and responsible basically for the obesity epidemic in America.
I think he's got an important message.
And yet in your book, you say, go ahead and say yes to sugar.
Well, that's not exactly what I said. But let's talk about Lustig for a minute. He's gotten a lot of attention because he's focused the public on something that's really important, which is the large amount of sugar that people are eating. But the truth of the matter is sugar is just a small part of the issue. It's a minor part of the issue. The main problem is that people have switched the focus of their diet from starches to animal foods, to beef and chicken and fish and dairy products and so on. That's the major problem. Again, not to give a free ride to kids drinking, a 20-ounce bottle of fructose-laden sugar. It is a problem. Why do I allow a little bit of sugar on the surface of the food? Because I want you to eat it. The tip of your tongue tastes with pleasure sweetness. You have sweet-tasting taste buds. You also have salty-tasting taste buds, which is another thing that I recommend that most people do is they add small amounts of salt and sugar to their starch-based meal plans. I want you to eat the food. And that's what tastes good. What tastes good in your meal is salt, sugar, spice. People don't like oil. Oh, I know some of you out there saying, I love oil. Fine. Pour yourself a half a glass of olive oil. Oh, I like meat. Fine. Boil yourself a piece of beef. Eat it. Or a boiled piece of chicken. Eat it. You don't like it. You can't get it down unless you cover it with barbecue sauce, which is loaded with salt, sugar, and spice. So what I'm saying is I so badly want you to solve your health problems. And I also want you to enjoy life and enjoy food. Food is supposed to be pleasurable. Oh, yeah, you could adapt to a diet of just potatoes or sweet potatoes or corn and beans and rice with no spice, no salt, no sugar. You could do that. But look at the huge thing I'm asking you to do already. I'm asking some of your listeners to go from they're going to have Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's for lunch today, and I'm asking them to go to a starch-based diet. I want it to taste as good as possible. So, yes, for almost everybody that's listening, you can use a little sugar, a little salt, some spice with your food and make it taste really good. So you have a delicious marinara sauce, you have a wonderful lasagna, bean burritos, minestrone soup, things you love.
And so why do you say that oil is not good for us? That was one of the harder things for me in terms of, just sautéing some onions and canola oil. Right. What's wrong with veggie-based oil?
The fat you eat's the fat you wear.
Right, but what if you're not overweight?
Well, let's just talk about the fact that 70% of people are. Okay, when they eat oil like olive oil, fish oil, canola oil, etc., it goes from the fork and spoon to their body fat, from my lips to my hips. Okay, if you're not fat, you look at the adverse effects of oil. They promote vegetable oils. Specifically, you're probably looking at the healthiest oils you're asking me about, such as flaxseed oil or fish oil, etc. These are pharmacologically quite potent substances. They cause things to happen. They suppress inflammation, which in addition to helping arthritis, it also suppresses the immune system that controls cancer and also your risk of infection. So you may have less arthritis if you eat these vegetable oils in terms of pain, but you have a higher risk of cancer, cancer growth, as well as microbial infections. Think about this for a minute. Oil does not exist in nature as a free substance. There is no free oil in nature. If you take a banana, now all of you listen, you got a banana in your right hand, and you rip the oil out of the banana, and you leave everything else behind, and you've got this oil, this puddle of oil in your left hand. Is that a food? Excuse me, is that a food? At best, that's a medicine. At worst, it's a toxic substance. That is no longer food. Olive oil is not food. Safflower oil or flaxseed oil, these are not foods. These are substances that have been ripped out of the basic food and sold to you as an isolated, concentrated ingredient, and at best they're medicines, at worst they're serious toxins with substantial pharmacologic effects. So these free oils that people are throwing all over everything, at the very least, they end up on your
That's Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of The Starch Solution. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. And Dr. McDougall, I just want to get to more calls. We've got so many people. I want to go to them. So let's go to Kara in San Francisco. Hi, Kara. Yeah. Welcome to Your Call.
Thank you. Where have you been all my life? Oh, my God. You don't know.
This is only my 12th.
We're going to be downloading and buying this book. And to justify our own obsession with carbohydrates, which is second only to our obsession with shoes. And I'm telling you, this is just a godsend. But you sort of lose me when you completely prohibit oils. Because bread without butter, oh, my God.
We'll put avocado on it.
Right. Well, that's true. But what I really wanted to know is... you know, I'm ready to join the club here, but I want to know, what does a meal look like? For example, I'm not going to eat 12 slices of bread every day.
Right.
And so what does a balanced diet on this regimen look like?
Great, great question. Okay, Kara, stick with us for a sec. Go ahead, Dr. McDougall. Give us some examples.
Well, like I said, you know, you can have oatmeal for breakfast, you can have hash browns, you can have pancakes, you can have waffles. For lunch, you can have bean soup, pea soup, lentil soup.
Burrito.
You can have veggie burgers, burritos. For dinner, there's 100 recipes in this book. This is our 12th book. We have 11 national best-selling books. My wife, Mary, has over 2,000 recipes published. We have 500 recipes that are free on our website, which is drmcdougall.com. So there's a whole variety of things to choose from, but I want you to think about something for a minute. When you're feeling overwhelmed, as our last caller may be a little bit, think about it for a minute. Your diet is very monotonous. You eat the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Mary's got over 2,000 recipes published for you. All you got to do is find one thing you like for breakfast. One thing. That's all you eat now. It's the same thing every day for breakfast. Just find one thing you like for breakfast. Find one thing you like for lunch and dinner. I mean, not two things. Say you find some stir-fry vegetable dish with all your favorite spices and vegetables in it based on rice or other types of grains. And say you find that you like. You decide you're going to eat that for lunch. Not just today, not just tomorrow, but every day, and dinner every day, just like the Asians do. They eat basically the same meal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Very simple. You know, the greeting for hello, how are you, you know, good morning, the greeting in Chinese is, have you had your rice today? Have you had your rice today? That's how they say hello. You know.
That's Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of The Starch Solution. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We have one open line, so I'm going to give out the number. If you're a meat eater, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think of Dr. McDougall's prescriptions? And what are the impediments to eating healthy? And what do you think the role of government is in all of this? 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll have all of this information at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Agnes in Berkeley. Hi, Agnes.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
This is an interesting show. I am half Filipino, grew up in the Philippines, and I have Chinese in-laws, and we just look agape at this obsession with eating all meat and No, carbohydrates. And, you know, I am also a student of physiology and nutrition, and it just seems that about 80% of the calories that we burn for our body should really come from complex carbohydrates. I'm not talking the sucrose in the sugar bowl, but the complex carbohydrates like rice that take time to break down and release the glucose into the bloodstream. If we eat inordinate amounts of meat, cutting out carbohydrates, we are poisoning our livers because they have to deaminate, take the amino acids off that extra protein, which then has to be excreted by the kidneys, and we get into all kinds of troubles with illness. These are the basis of the illness of people who eat too much protein and not enough of anything else.
Well, thank you.
We are omnivores, and we evolved to eat everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation. Well, thank you so much for that. Agnes, I'm going to go ahead and go to Benjamin in San Leandro just because we're running low on time and I want to get to more callers. Benjamin, welcome to your call.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Dr. McDougall. I actually went to McDougall's program in March of last year. When I got there, was 325 pounds, extremely obese with type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and in about 9 months lost 70 pounds. I reversed my type 2 diabetes completely, got off all my medications, eating white potatoes almost every single day. And what I think McDougall was trying to say earlier is, like, you find four or five things that you really like, and you make those things over and over again, and I don't feel like I feel satisfied every day. I'm never hungry, and I'm in really, really good health now. So I just wanted to throw that out there for anyone who's listening.
Well, thank you for that testimonial, Benjamin. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Andrea in Oakland. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I'm wondering what the connection is between this diet and two different things. One is hormones, with women especially. I was a vegetarian for about 15 years, and around 40, my hormones started changing, and I started craving meat. And now I eat a balanced diet. And the second connection I wonder about is I've also had, again, now in this time of my life, a lot of recurring yeast infections, and the only way to treat them effectively is to go for at least several weeks without any carbohydrates at all. And so I generally don't eat a lot of carbs, and I wonder what his opinion is on that.
Yeah, let's hear Dr.
McDougall. I'm not going to go to the yeast one, but I really want to talk about the hormone thing. I actually wrote an article in my last newsletter about child abuse. And one of the things I talked about, and I know this will offend some of your listeners, is one of the most serious forms of child abuse that's occurring in this country is precocious puberty. We're causing our children, who should become sexually mature around 16, 17, 18 years of age, we're causing them to develop, for example, in the case of little girls, to develop breasts and pubic hair around 8, 9, 10 years of age. This is abuse. This is child abuse. Yeah, you can change your hormones by changing what you eat, the rich Western diet. But look at the impact on society. Look at the impact on our children. When is somebody going to stand up and say, enough is enough? Yeah, if you're over 21, you can do whatever you want. You know, you're of the age of consent. When are we going to start protecting the children? 30% are obese. These kids are going through sexual maturity 5 to 10 years before intended. And the consequences are to them and their families and society. I don't know. That's enough.
Well, thank you. That's Dr. John.
You're going to get McDougall. Me carried away,
Holly. It doesn't take much, does it, Dr. McDougall? I'm going to read a few emails. Sue Reynolds in Foster City says, when I eat helpful grain cereals for breakfast, including oatmeal, I get hungry before lunchtime. When I eat meat, bacon, ham, or sausage for breakfast, I don't get hungry until well after the standard lunchtime. How does Dr. McDougall explain this and or deal with it?
Well, yeah, I used to call this the Chinese restaurant syndrome. You go to a Chinese restaurant, you're hungry an hour later. It's just a matter of adjustment. You know, as you learn to eat differently, you get responses, different signals. You used to respond to a chunk of meat and a glob of fat in your stomach. That used to mean full. Well, it doesn't really mean full for most people because they keep eating. In fact, where you really get your satisfaction is from carbohydrates. Anyway, when you switch to a starch-based diet, what happens is those hunger drives, they become very appropriate. You feel very full, just like, as I say, you know, 1.73 billion Asians couldn't be wrong.
Well, I just,
they are becoming
I just
wrong.
Eat again before lunch. But Aaron writes and says, please have another show on the topic of obesity with more than one comparative and self-promoting guest. This is about his idea, not about obesity.
I love
obesity.
That. I must have really
so
been effective.
We don't have very much time, though, but I do want you to talk just a little bit. We literally have 30 seconds about fad diets. And how do you feel about being part of that sort of diet industry?
I'm not part of the fad diet. I'm a medical doctor. You know, I happen to have what I believe to be the answer to a question that every one of your listeners should be able to answer, and that is, what is the diet of a person, of a human being?
Excellent.
You
Thank
ask
you.
Your audience.
Thank you, so much. I'm so sorry we're just out of time. Dr. John McDougall is the author of The Starch Solution. Thanks to everybody who joined us. Thanks for your calls, and I'm so sorry we couldn't get to everything. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call, and you can also join the conversation at yourcallradio.org.
And I'm Matt Martin, joining Holly Kernan here in the studio. We are in our May membership campaign here at KALW. And just as on Your Call, we open up the lines, we ask you, what do you want to know? What questions do you have? Do you want to challenge our guests? That's the kind of conversation we want to have here, an open, intelligent conversation that brings you in. And that kind of conversation only happens when you decide to get involved. We have had hundreds of people just today say, KALW is a station that I want to support. I want to see the conversations, the information, the music, the culture keep coming. Be the next person to call. Help us make it to our goal of 20 calls or clicks during this hour. 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or online at kalw.org. Your support at any level will make a big difference for KALW.
Big difference for KALW. 1-800-525-9917. We do this one member at a time, and if you're a fan of Your Call, what did we have? A comment yesterday, Rose Aguilar should be president. I hear this all the time from people. Well, what we need to hear is from you, that you support this. 100% of the funding for Your Call comes from you, one person at a time. 1-800-525-9917, or go online to KALW.org. You can see all of the thank you gifts that are there. Maybe you can pledge 120. That would be fabulous. You are sustaining this show, these kind of in-depth conversations. 1-800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org.
We do have The Starch Solution, Dr. McDougall's book, yours for a $120 contribution to KALW. $50 is the basic membership level. Today we've had guests, we've had gifts of $200, $300, different people from across this community coming together to say, how are we going to keep this going? How are we going to make sure it grows? How are we going to widen the perspectives on the radio? Your support makes it happen. 800-525-9917. If we hit that 20 calls before the end of the program, before we go to the BBC, we will get an additional $500 from Paul Sack in San Francisco. 800-525-9917. We had 7 going into this break, so you could be the person who could push us over.
Please push us over that edge. We need your support to keep these breaks short. 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. As Matt said, we have such a range of contributions from everybody, which reflects the way that the show is. We get contributions from listeners who call in, listeners who write in, listeners who suggest programs for us. That's what makes it work, is that we do this together. 1-800-525-9917. We started this show in 2001. We have been around now for more than 10 years, serving this community, bringing conversations you won't hear anywhere else. 1-800-525-9917. We need 13 calls, and we have 55 seconds, Matt. KALW.org is another way to do it.
800-525-9917. And when it comes to this challenge, as we go to the BBC headlines, every pledge that comes in before those headlines are over, count for this hour of Your Call and the challenge from Paul Sack, someone just like you who says, I value public radio rooted in the community, and I understand listener support is what makes it happen.
And we are non-commercial. 1-800-525-9917. We're non-commercial because you call and you donate $100, $200, maybe $1,000. We have had that happen. 1-800-525-9917. We have this good book to give you as a thank you, The Starch Solution. 1-800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org, where you can see the thank you gifts that we have to offer. We're not spending time talking about them because we want to focus on the programming. That's what you value. You've told us you appreciate it. Let's make it work. 800-525-9917. Thanks for your support.